This is the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. And as the Beatles sing When I'm 64 in the background, we have a gentleman here who's 30 years beyond that and still creating new content. And that means I get to talk to him. This has become an annual event because he writes a new book every year. Comedy legend Carl Reiner is back on the phone today. Hi, Carl. How are you?
Hi. Am I coming in clearly? I'm speaking to a box. I can put it to my ear if I'm not getting clear to you.
You sound great. As long as we can hear you and you can hear us, we can have the conversation. Okay, good. The book is called Carl Reiner, Now You're 94, and unfortunately, you waited so long to publish it, the title is moot now, Carl, because you just turned 95.
Yes, I know.
Happy birthday.
It was published a few days before I turned 95, so it's still valid. No, it was a labor of love, and I really enjoyed doing it.
This is a graphic diary where you literally take your readers through your day, starting from your morning exercises, and that's where the graphic part comes, because that's where we get to see Carl Reiner in his underwear.
Oh.
Yeah. You know, as a matter of fact, somebody just reminded me that I don't know if you get Tavis Smiley. It's on PBS.
Yes.
You get him?
Yes.
Oh, because my son Rob and I were on his show last week, and we were plugging the fact that both of us, father and son, have been the first father and son to have their handprints as Grauman's Chinese.
Wow.
Together next week. Anyway, so we were talking to him, and I was saying that the book, and this is true, is it's a public service, and I'll tell you why. I would about a week or 2 weeks ago, I was going on the Conan O'Brien show, maybe 3 weeks ago,
yep.
And I was coming down the stairs for breakfast, and I tripped, and I fell down a flight of stairs, landed on my back, and popped right up and went to breakfast. Nothing happened to me, and it's really because the first five pages of the book will explain it. When I was about, 30 or so, I slipped on an icy stairway in my house in the Bronx, and I went to a therapist, and he said, if you do what I'm about to tell you for the rest of your life, you're going to be fine. He says, do not get out of bed until you do the following 10 stretches. I think there are 8 or 10. And that's what I do every morning before getting up, and they're in the book. Matter of fact, to sell the book, we had placards
billboards and
billboards with showing me doing the stretches. And I'm not kidding. If you do those stretches, don't get out of bed. They said if you ever get out of bed, you don't go back to doing the stretches. And I've been doing it for 50 years. Which enabled me to fall down flight of steps with impunity.
Now, that's amazing, and I'm really glad you weren't hurt. But I'm curious, you worked with some very physical comedians, Dick Van Dyke and Steve Martin and others. But in all the work that you did in front of the camera, did you ever do pratfalls?
No, but I was a very good jumper. I could jump a lot. That's what my main thing was. I wasn't a dancer, but I had a wild, every time I came on the Carson show or any show where I was plugging something, when they introduced me before coming out, I did a wild dance, a crazy dance, and I'm a jumper, not a dancer.
Yeah, I kind of remember some of those that you used to do when you were on with Johnny.
Yes.
Since the last time we talked, Carl, we've had the unfortunate news of the death of Mary Tyler Moore, who...
No, one of the saddest things.
Yeah.
He had a great life, and she also informed the women's movement almost single-handedly with that show she had after she left us. But the sad thing is that I always felt sad for her. She was she never showed it, but... Her early background, well, she once told me that, she came from a mother and father who paid no attention to her. Her mother was an alcoholic and died of alcoholism. And her father was one of these taciturn, quiet men who never spoke with her. As a matter of fact, she said, I never forgot this. She said, I got one comment from him when I turned 16 and I went to my prom graduation in high school, and she said, he looked at me and he said, Mary, you look very handsome. That's the only, and then of course she married badly the first time. It was a marriage that didn't work. She had a child. This is so tragic. Who was playing with a rifle, and he accidentally killed himself sitting on a couch.
Wow.
So that's the beginning of her career. And the fact that she pulled herself together, because she was a very strong person internally. Amazing how she fought back from all the diversity. I'll never forget, you know, I've talked about this a number of times. When I wrote the show, called The Head of the Family, after I finished the show of shows in 1950, I was being offered situation comedies. The review format died until Carol Burnett resurrected it 10 years later.
Yep.
But the review format was dead, and I was being offered situation comedies. And my wife said, why don't you write one? Because they weren't good, the ones I was being offered. And I wrote a thing called Head of the Family. I did a pilot of it with Sylvia Miles and a couple of very wonderful actors. I'm forgetting those.
Morty Gunty was one of them.
Morty Gunty, but the woman who played the lead was so beautiful and sweet. I lost her name. It'll come to me.
Okay.
In my book someplace.
That's okay.
Yeah, that's what happens when you get older.
I understand.
Yeah.
So you did that show, and then...
So I had written 13 episodes because I wanted to have a Bible for other writers after, you know, I wasn't going to be alone for the whole series. And it didn't work, and I left it, and I started doing movies. I did a Doris Day movie. And my agent and Sheldon Leonard's, we had a mutual agent, and my agent was very upset that there was gold laying on his desk in his 13 scripts. And Sheldon called me in, and he said he loved the scripts. And I said, Sheldon, I'm sorry, but I don't want to fail with the same material twice. And he said to me, and this is a fairly good impression, he said, you won't fail, Carl. We'll get a better actor to play you. And he suggested Dick Van Dyke. I went to New York and saw him in Bye Bye Birdie with Gina Rivera. Man could do anything. I really realized that he, at that point, he was, to me, the most talented human being I've ever seen.
Yep.
And then, but I the problem was finding the part to play, the girl to play Laura. And I saw 35 different girls, and this is a tribute to her. She walked in one day, Mary Tyler Moore did, not wanting to audition because she had failed two or three times that week at other auditions. She was sort of recalcitrant, and she stood in the doorway. I gave her a page to read, and she read it, and I stopped her immediately. I heard a ping, that's the way I described it, in her voice, and I said, I remember telling Sheldon, I've seen 35 girls. I don't know who I'm looking for. He said, you'll know when you find her. And that moment, I looked at those eyes, the smile, the lips, and that beautiful hair, and those gorgeous legs, and I said to myself, I found her. And I made my hand into a claw, the kind that you see at the, that pull candy out of... machines, you know,
and an arcade.
An arcade, right. Thank you for the arcade. I can always forget that.
You're welcome.
And I walked across the room with my clawed hand, grabbed the top of her head and said, come with me, young lady. She thought I was going to accost her. And I walked her down the hall to Sheldon. I said, you're right, Sheldon. I found her.
Yeah.
Hey, Carl, was the other woman that you were thinking of, trying to think of, Barbara Britton?
Barbara Britton, yes. She was so lovely, but I wasn't. That was fair. I was okay.
Yeah. Carl, you mentioned a couple of projects that you did during the Dick Van Dyke years. I after Robert Osborne, the legendary host of Turner Classic Movies, died a couple of weekends ago, they did a whole weekend of tributes to him, and they showed interviews that he had done with a bunch of people, and one of them was with the director Norman Jewison, who he made The Cincinnati Kid and Fiddler on the Roof and about 10 fantastic historical movies. He also directed a movie that you wrote, which you alluded to, called The Thrill of It All, with Doris Day. I looked it up. That was in 1963. How did you do that in the middle of doing the Dick Van Dyke Show?
I just did it. And, you have 24 hours a day, and you can, if you're very solicitous of your time, you can do anything. No, that was just a labor of love, because it had been started, and then I think I worked with Larry Gelbart on it, didn't I? I think so.
Maybe.
Yeah. Anyway, and so that was one of those lovely things that, and I think I played a small part in it. I think I played a couple of roles. Yeah, I did.
Yeah, that was directed by Jewison, and also on that Robert Osborne weekend, I saw an interview he did with Alan Arkin, who, of course, you know, because he starred in your Broadway play, Enter Laughing, and which turned into a movie, which Arkin, by the way, was not in. I was surprised about that.
Well, the surprise is, first of all, Arkin won a Tony Award for playing Enter Laughing, but when we did the movie, the boy Enter Laughing is supposed to be 17 or 18 years old, and he was about 22 or 3 at the time, but by the time we did the movie, he was 32.
Oh.
On a screen, you would see he was not 17.
Yeah, but Arkin also talked about the movie that you and he co-starred in.
Oh, yeah, that was one of the... Well, first of all, Arkin, I think, is one of the great actors we've ever had. There was a thing called... he played a mute in it. One of the most beautiful movies I've ever seen. I think it was his first movie.
Mm-hmm.
But his the Russians Are Coming is what that was the first and only time I ever played a starring part in a movie. And I remember Norman Jewison came to my house and said, he has a part he'd like me to do in a movie, and I was working the very end of the Van Dyke Show era, and I said, and he told me what it was. He says, it's this Russian. And I said, no, I said, on the show I did so much double talk Russian and all that kind of, I don't feel like I'd be up to that. And he came back and he said, how about playing the lead opposite Eva Marie Saint? That, I said, I've played a lead, certainly opposite that woman who played with Marlon Brando and Gregory Peck. I said, absolutely. And that afforded me one of the most exciting times I've had in my life.
Alan Arkin said that working with Norman Jewison and you on that movie was the best time he ever had on any movie.
That's what I said, too. Norman is just the sweetest human being ever. And so daring. He used to make shots. He'd go up poles with a camera all by himself to see if he can find a shot on top of a 100-foot pole.
Mm-hmm.
He looked danger in the eye all the time.
That movie was came out in 1966 when we were seriously in the midst of the Cold War with Russia. Do you think that affected Americans?
You know something? I absolutely do, because he took that movie to Russia and played it, screened it for them, and it was very well received there. And he has gotten acclaim, Norman did, for sort of tamping down the war between not the war, but the feelings between our two countries. They said he eased the tensions. And I think he did.
Yeah, I think what it did was it showed Americans Russians can be idiots, too.
Right.
And vice versa. Exactly. It showed Russians, look, Americans can be idiots.
Yeah, right.
While we're talking about movies, you and I have had so many conversations through the years, and I went back through a couple of them today, and I realized I have never asked you anything about the movie Oh God, which you directed, and which starred George Burns and John Denver and Terry Garr.
Right.
How did you cast them?
Well, first of all, the casting of George Burns was absolutely perfect. When somebody suggested him, I said, that's the only man who can play it. When you think about his show, the Burns and Allen show, he always started the show outside of the house and sort of prophesied what was going to happen when he got in there.
Yep.
He sort of had an overview of the world. I said, that's perfect. And when they said, who's to play every man? And when the word John Denver came up, who, by the way, never acted in his life, but is such a real person. When I heard him sing those songs, Annie, and I saw him talking, the first day I met him, I said, this is every man. This is every man.
So how was that, working with a longtime show business veteran like George Burns and an absolute neophyte in John Denver?
Well, John Denver was, two things were, John Denver was absolutely amazing. You know, a few times I had to change some dialogue, and a good paragraph and a half, we rewrote, and I said, John, is this what I'd like you to say? And they take it to your dressing room and work on it. He said, no, just tell it to me. I told it to him. Let's go for it. Without even rehearsing, he did the lines absolutely perfect. He had one of these memories that was incredible. I never forgot that. And George Burns, on the other hand, too. One day we changed some scene that we're going to do, a different scene that day. I said, George, we're not going to do a scene. We decided, so you better look at what we're going to do. He says, I can do any scene. I said, why? He said, I learned the whole show. He learned the whole movie before he ever stepped foot on stage.
He had memorized the entire script, even the parts
movie.
He wasn't in?
And by the way, can I say some dirty things on the air?
Not really.
Okay, but you can bleep this, can't you?
Yeah, just substitute other words.
Know, I told this on, as a matter of fact, I think on the Tavis Smiley show I told it. So yeah, I'm going to tell it to you, and it's something that George Burns said to me.
All right, hold on. Ian, get your finger over the button.
All right, I'm ready.
just in case. Go ahead.
I said to the last day of shooting, I wanted to say goodbye to him. I went to his trailer, and I said, George, you're 80 years old. I'm 60. What do I have to look forward to sexually when I get to be your age? I always see you walking around with a couple of women going to nightclubs. And he said to me, rolling a cigar in his mouth, he took it out, and he says, Carl, did you ever try to put a oyster in a slot machine? There it is. That's the equation. You're laughing.
Yeah.
My equation for saying things that are a little off color, if it's got to be twice as funny as it is delicious.
that is one of the greatest lines I've ever heard.
Oh man.
That is wonderful.
Worth the price of admission.
Before I let... take your finger off the button now, Ian. He didn't have to push it. Before I let you go here, in your 7 decades in show business, I'm fairly sure that if you didn't meet all of them, you met most of the presidents of the United States.
I did.
And I'm curious if any of them ever invited you and your late wife, Estelle, to sleep in the Lincoln bedroom.
Oh, yes, of course. When I got the Mark Twain Prize, I got it at the Kennedy Center, Clinton was our president then,
uh-huh.
And he called over and invited me to come to the White House. He wasn't there. He didn't present me, but he wanted a picture of me getting the Mark Twain Award and him handing it to me. It was a sort of a photo op.
Yep.
And so I was very happy. My wife and I went there, and we had the... You know when they said that... First of all, I learned something about Clinton that everybody, when he said, I feel your pain.
Yep.
Well, my brother, when I got the Twain Award, my brother, who was really on his way to go, he had really, he was in failure, but he came from Atlanta, Georgia, with a catheter in him, with a nurse, because my tribute was to him, because I was an actor because he's the one who decided that I should be an actor. He gave me a little clipping from the newspaper that said free acting classes by the WPA, Works Progress Administration, that Roosevelt instituted. And that's how I became an actor. When I was 17, I got free acting classes.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so now their president is, my whole family was there, and President Clinton met with them. He invited them all to the White House. Yeah, as a matter of fact, there's a picture in the book, I think.
Yep, there is.
Yeah, and so, but this is what really got to me. When I told him my brother was in 11 major battles in World War II, became very interested. It was that he had just come back from the D-Day celebration, a memorial that was in France.
Mm-hmm.
And he sat on the end of a chair to get to my brother's level, who was sitting in a wheelchair, and he said, he told him, he said, do you get a chance to go there? He said, no. He said, well, I went there with a friend of mine whose brothers fought in that battle. And he said, you know, how he used to say, I feel your pain.
Mm-hmm.
He started to talk to Charlie, and he said, my friend, who pointed over to where there were some trees, he said, you see that group of trees there? He says, that's where I saw my brother, one brother blown up by a mortar shell. And then he pointed to another, he says, that field over there, I saw my other brother get blown up.
Mm.
And as Clinton is telling this, he's tearing, he's crying, he pulled out his handkerchief. He started, and I said, that's for real.
Yeah.
He didn't talk to my brother for a long time. And then, you know, he likes to talk, and that night he invited Stella and I, my wife, to sleep at the White House. But before we did, we went to the kitchen looking for something to eat. And there was nothing there but some big old birthday cake, a large one. And we sat at 12 o'clock for an hour just chatting away about the world and entertainment and politics and eating the cake.
Wow.
And then he invited us to, and we slept in the Lincoln bedroom. I could not believe it.
That's fantastic. Just one of the amazing stories from the amazing life of Carl Reiner, who has a new book out called Now You're 94. It's a graphic diary. It's available only from this website, randomcontent.com. And, of course, we'll put a link to it on both our Facebook page and on my website, harrisonline.com.
And, by the way, if they want it personally autographed to them, I will do that if they just tell me who and what their name is.
That's great. Carl, I'm all out of time, but it's a pleasure talking to you again, and I look forward to next year with the new book.
Hey, the new book is just about to be printed. It's called
Oh, my goodness.
Busy to Die.
Oh.
And there's a children's book coming out. You say, God bless you for sneezing and farting.
We'll talk about all of that next time. The legendary Carl Reiner here with Paul Harris on the Big 550 KTRS in St. Louis. Thank you so much, Carl.